Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. What is that inner voice telling you? That's what we're going to talk about today. We're in the midst of, we're finishing up, actually. You see how bundled up I am? It's sunny. I'm getting blinded by the light. It will move out of the way in a bit, and so don't be alarmed. We are finishing up this book on the 3,000 Realms, this collection of teachings that I put together. You can get it as an ebook on threefoldlotus.com, or you can buy the print book at lulu.com. And I thought I'd take a break with it because Tendai is getting really specific on how our mind works in his description of the 3,000, what was it? Not the realms. He said the, what did he call it? The categories of existence. And I thought, man, that's great, those words. And I thought, let me do a video that just addresses the scope of words in the various sutras and the various teachers, Nichiren Tendai, Myaolo, Dengyo, Shakyamuni. What is this? What are we talking about? And I think, and I want to do this because I think this is something I recognized in myself too many years ago to recall when, but it's something that I wonder if not all of us contend with at some point in our lives, Buddhist or not. And I want to relate this teaching of the 3,000 realms so it's not this thing we have to learn like it's some other language or some other concept that's foreign to us. I want to show you how this is just words describing something that's so blindingly obvious, and yet, like so many things that are obvious, we never seem to really iron it out for ourselves. We just sort of go with it. And so I thought, and I'm sure I'll cover some cliches at various points in this dialogue, but please, let's do this thought experiment together, okay? We've all heard this different varieties of saying this voice in your head. I heard that voice in the back of my head, or in the, I thought I would do this, but that little voice in the back of my head said, maybe that's not such a good idea. And so I didn't do it, and look at the way things turned out, right? We talk like that all the time, don't we? If that's not familiar to you, think about how many times you've awakened in the morning in your bed or wherever you sleep. And in those moments, even before you open your eyes and accept the light of the day, you're already mulling over what the day is going to be. And you know, not all the time, but sometimes as you're thinking about the day, you're already pissed off. Right? You have an inner monologue. You're talking to yourself. And you know what? Today, I'm just going to be pissed off. I'm fed up. I'm tired. I'm going to be pissed off at the coffee pot. I'm going to be angry that I can't find the coffee because it's been moved again and my roommate knows. And so you decide today, whatever happens, I'm just going to be miserable. I'm going to be angry, unsettled. I'm going to challenge everybody. Screw all! And your head is just having fun dancing with these thoughts, right? And the funny thing is, you're totally determined to do this, and you can't find the coffee, and you spill the creamer, and you can't help it, and you start talking to the room, whether your roommate's out of bed or not even there, and where the hell did you put the da da da? And then you open the cupboard, and you go, oh yeah, I put it in that different place. I decided the other day that was a better place to keep it. So, how embarrassing. I did it, you know. God damn it, you know. And then you're angry at yourself. And something else to pick up. Or you find it and you go, oops, how embarrassing, and turn red. And then you kind of laugh it off and go, ugh, this is just ridiculous life. And you, ha, 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 ha. Well, what just happened? So our mood, our emotions, our, even though we commit ourselves to a certain voice and we say, we're going to color the day with this, in an instant, it can all vanish, and you can feel it physically, this tingling of, oh, usually when you're embarrassed or surprised, right? But you can be embarrassed or surprised at yourself, right? So, holding on to that thought for a moment, let's think about that thought. That little voice, whether it's the morning voice or whether it's the voice that tells you, maybe I shouldn't, wherever that voice is located, it's your inner monologue, okay? And the inner monologue is that umbrella term for all those little voices at different times, and whether they're focused and you're working something out, or it's just a little hint in the back of your mind going, eh, right? Let's just call all of those voices, all right? I'm not talking about schizophrenia, but that's another topic of discussion. I just want to identify the way our minds work. Just Buddhist or none. The fact of the matter is, and it is a fact, that whatever that voice is that we're listening to or having a conversation with, I want you to imagine that it's just a talking head or a talking mouth, if it's helpful. Visualize it as a singular thing, okay? And it's yakking at you or back at you, and you're yakking to it in this cloud called the mind, yeah? And I want you to imagine that orator is actually a peak of a immeasurably large pyramid. I mean, you can't see the bottom of it, but you recognize that this is a focal point and a vertex, an apex, sorry, of what? What is the pyramid? More voices, more orators. Now think about that for a moment. Think about every voice that you hear actually being just the nearest, most engaged. And like you're listening, your perception, your inner mind listening is like a very directional microphone, like a real shotgun mic, you know, that only hears where it's pointed, and when you, it doesn't hear this, right? And that, think of that is what's happening in your inner monologue. And that top voice that you're listening to, that it actually is the sound, the words, the thoughts of all of those voices beneath it. And it's your interaction, your mic, its sensitivity with that cacophony of noise coming from that voice, that mouth, that's deciding good, bad. That interaction is what's making up the way you're experiencing that inner monologue. That's why it can change on in fraction of a second, because all that is one of the other voices coming through louder than that one. Your mic just got bumped. Oop, Oh. And so that place that that voice is atop of, that place has infinite amounts of tones and ideas and differences, right? It's like the little voice that says, when you found the coffee, for instance, that other voice that says, God, you're an idiot. You hate that voice. You hate being reminded of how stupid you are. Well, it's not that you're stupid, of course, but there's that voice. But it has many, many, many varieties, right? You're stupid because you always do this. You never have. You're just like your mother. I can't figure this out. I must really be an idiot. All of those are behind that, right, where your mic is pointed, that general voice of dissatisfaction, disapproval, dislike of whatever your identity is at that particular moment. Now you see how this is more of a place than a singular voice. It's a neighborhood of information or attitude. And if we move our mic completely away from it, or just to one surface of the pyramid, we reach an area of the neighborhood that's quite different. We may jump to a whole other pyramid, because if you look at a pyramid, it's built of pyramids, isn't it? All running together into one. Oh, what a visual idea. And each one of those is a neighborhood. It's a place of its own. Ultimately, that pyramid, or the pyramid of pyramids, is also within something that affords the opportunity for those pyramids to be constructed, to exist. I want this to be relatable to our daily experience right now, because you do not have to be a Buddhist or study Buddhism to recognize that what I'm saying is familiar. I'm digging into it a little deeper than we usually do. We usually talk about an inner monologue or an inner voice as a singular thing. What I'm adding the dimension to it is that obviates why it changes so easily and quickly and even without notice. Because it isn't a voice or a monologue. It's not you talking to yourself. It's you influencing yourself. And those influences are constructed on a bed of a lot of other influences. Right? I mean, don't have to be Buddhist to go, yeah, I get it. I get what you're saying, right? So what if I told you that that is the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment? That when we talk about the 10 realms of samsaric life, we're just identifying pyramids, voices, realms, neighborhoods, places of influence in the mind. And the idea that the 10 we start with as a number are within the 10 is the same as the pyramid within the pyramid that are shifted in focus. They're different collections of voices. So far, yeah, that agrees with our experience. We're putting different words around it, but okay. 10 within the 10, that's 100. And then we think about it a little further and like, yeah, that those voices of that neighborhood, they all have an epistemology. Oops, big word. All right, retracted. They all have a bunch of sources. Something that created their very assumption, their very existence, right? That allows them to manifest as something. Something justifies their opinion, those voices. And those justifications are, we don't even remember them all. They're just tiny little moments of experience that are interpreted. They may not be exactly that, but they're interpreted as supporting the theory of these opinions and voices. They're tiny minutiae that have constructed the neighborhood. Now, this is where we really need to start transferring our thinking to Buddhist scholarship, because this is what Tendai identified in Shakyamuni's teachings. This is, in fact, what Shakyamuni constructed his teachings around, was taking people deeper and deeper into understanding that the way their mind constructed their idea of self was, in fact, the way it mollified and provided an experience of life in this moment. These built-up ideas and opinions and judgments identified, the warehouse of identification, affects and influence every new moment like a huge coffee filter, and our little coffee grains spewing forth what we're experiencing now. It's a little bit disconcerting to think that we don't actually experience the world and the realms and the life as it truly is, because we're constantly seeing it through these myriad lenses of the pyramids of judgments, identification, that database that we keep dragging along of what we know life is. But what we know is our judgment of experience of life. How can we know accurately what life is without all of those opinions and judgments coloring it? Ooh, that's the conundrum, isn't it? Because what Shakyamuni identified, and now we're in Buddhism, is that it is that very database, that warehouse of identifications that precipitates, that causes, that justifies our anxiety, our stress, our, quote, suffering. There it is. And so what Shakyamuni did is he said, well, if you understand that that's how your mind works, and you don't need to dig any further, if you understand that conceptually, then you must also understand that all of that happens within a larger sphere, realm, place. So what is that? What is that untainted by, uncolored by, undiluted by my various pyramids? How can I experience actual full life without all of that judgment and attachment and coloration? I want to see. I want to surface. I want to get out of the. I want to breathe fresh, open, unjudged air in my mind. I want to know what all of life is, not just my particular matrix of stuff. How do I do that? What is it like? What? How does that? How do I open my mind to what is happening in the moment right now, fully, without all this baggage? And Shakyamuni simply says, well, then you have to look outside the baggage, because that's where it all is. The baggage itself is a manifestation of all that potential, but it is a bucket, a warehouse. You need to free yourself from the warehouse. Let the warehouse exist. Don't deny it. Don't destroy it. But view it from outside of itself. Look at all the warehouses around you. Yeah? Analogy holding together? That view, that's Buddha. And then looking back on all the warehouses and experiencing everything at once becomes knowable, because now it's an experience that is known. And that knowing, now the interrelationships with all of those warehouses, those pyramids, those realms, becomes easily viewed. That's Buddha wisdom. The wisdom is, as a bodhisattva in samsara, how do I course in this? How do I experience this? How do I influence this with all of this knowing, this awakening? Do you see now why I say to you, and I believe Nichiren said it in many ways, many times, that this 3,000 realms in a single thought moment of life, with Shakyamuni completely identified in this lifespan chapter, it's the core. It's the core of the teachings, not the core of Buddhahood. But in order to discover Buddhahood, and this is what Tendai is taking apart, in order to prepare that mind of enlightenment, one has to first recognize the tools that we're working with and how the tools can work to achieve this enlightenment. And all of the tools have to do with the mind. And our greatest, our most powerful use of that tool is, my mind just went all over the place. Is to use that tool free of its own limitations. I was thinking of a hammer and how a hammer in and of itself is just a fancy rock. It's an implement of power displaced, used in a non-injurious way. It's a replacement for a fist. But just as that, it doesn't present much use to us. If we turn that violence of that impact of what a rock can do into a focused, constructive way, we can build skyscrapers, right? We can build aircraft. We can build homes. We can build transportation, sleds, wheels, plows, on and on and on. So the tool is one thing, but how do we implement it? How do we focus its implementation? Here we go with the eye thing again. So here it is, the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. The realms that you're going through right now in every single... It's not that you need to identify them all. Stop doing that. That's not helpful. No, it's just the thought experiment of understanding that whenever we think to ourselves that we're in control or that our life is this way, whenever we make these imperatives, these judgments, and we do it all the time, that's just samsara. To recognize that that's a game that we're playing, that all of it exists within a much more vast framework, and that if we can open that consciousness, that ninth consciousness, that awareness, right? That gohonzon, that we can then view all of it, experience all of it as something in its entirety rather than from some little focal point, some little mouthpiece, that's just like a fly buzzing in the room. It is not the room. Shift your focus from that annoying mosquito to the entirety of life. Suddenly the mosquito is just one infinitesimal little aspect of the whole. It doesn't have all your attention and importance. But that takes training. We don't do that naturally. It's not how we're built, samsaric beings. With a sentient mind, we're able to observe our sentient behavior, and we can transcend it. We can see the bigger picture. We can deepen, broaden our experience of life. And that's what expands our local experience. Our self becomes less and less local and experiential in this fleshly container and becomes much more inclusive of our environment, from butterflies to neighbors, from mountains to shrubbery. It all becomes within the scope of self, until that experience grows to encompass the engine of life. It's hard to conceive of, isn't it? But it is an experience that is available to us every single moment. No one can keep us from it except ourselves. This is what Shakyamuni was saying. Buddha is not dying. Shakyamuni, I'm a man. Buddha, to be aware, to have that light go on of Buddha, is something that's intrinsic to everything that exists. It is that function. You suddenly need to be aware. You need to focus your mind, your local mind, on perceiving that truth. That's why he called it a truth. It's not something to cultivate, to find, to qualify for. Anyone who tells you that you need to qualify in order to get the tools for you to attain Buddhahood is an enemy of the Buddha, an enemy of enlightenment. They're an obstacle. Whatever their agenda, I don't give a crap what their agenda is. Their agenda, in truth, is stopping you. Because it's yours already. Don't let anyone stop you. This is why I make the mandala available to everyone to download it. ThreefoldLotus.com. Go to the ebooks page. Download a digital copy. Print it out. Respect it. Frame it. Put it in an altar. Because that's not Gohanzon. You have Gohanzon. It's already there. It's the very place where all those pyramids of neighborhoods exist. Within that engine of life. All right. That's it for that one. I hope that was a helpful analogy. One of my goals with this channel, with all of these resources, is to demystify Buddhism. It's like a finger pointing at the emperor. The emperor's naked. That's what Buddhism is. Just see the truth. That's all Buddhism is. Not always easy to do. And that's why we need these confidence builders, these ways of understanding, training our attitude and our intent to always work from that neighborhood. The Buddha within every one of those voices. That changes our samsaric life into a bodhisattva life. Keeping that awareness, that Gohanzon door flung open. Because as soon as we change our attitude and our intent, the way we move forward through time, everything appears different. Just like when we get up in the morning saying, I'm going to be miserable, and then something happens to make us laugh. Stay there. Because now everything that you were stubbing your toe and slamming this and dropping that, it stops immediately. Because you altered your frame of reference, your mind, your way of experiencing. Yeah? Namo Myo Renge Kyo. Thanks for listening. Please like and subscribe. Help grow this channel. Patrons, if you can, on Patreon or on PayPal, help support, defer the costs of doing all this. It's the world we live in, right? It's the only source of support other than, it is the only source of support. Even Sandra does it out of a need for herself. Namo Myo Renge Kyo. We all benefit from her. And those of you who donate money, time, material, it helps all of us. So profound thanks to all of you for your support. And mostly, all of you, for your practice. Without that, what are we? Yeah? So, with that gratitude, please take care of your health. I'll see you in the next one, and we'll continue with the... I don't know how close we'll get to the end of it, but we'll continue with Tendai's words on the mind of enlightenment. Bye for now.